Welcome to the Geeky Grandma with an Encouraging Nudge podcast. Hi, my name is Jill McCarthy from Central New York State, and this is our
20th
podcast, and I'm so glad you're here.
Hello, ladies. This is Jill McCarthy back, and today our guest is a woman named Linda Bryce, and I'm going to read a little bit of her bio so that you can find out about this amazing woman, and she has some unusual interests, but it's so vital to where we all are. Linda Bryce is an author, educator, and bedside singer who offers emotional and spiritual support to those navigating serious illness and approaching death. Linda's early experience with healthcare for seniors and later at the bedside of her dying husband took her to hundreds more to sit vigil, to sing to the dying, and to offer her professional end-of-life doula skills. Linda is an author. She's written a book called The Courage to Care, Being Fully Present with the Dying, was a number one Amazon bestseller and winner of a 2022 first place Gold Award from the Global Book Awards. The book is full of wise counsel and stories that will land in the mind of your heart to provide compassionate support and a peaceful journey for those who are dying and for their families. She's also written a children's book called Old Oak and Little Pumpkin, based on an original story by her late husband. It was published on September 30th, 2022, just a few days ago. Next up, she's writing Where We're Never Far Apart, a young reader chapter book, which follows the grief and healing journey of a young girl whose best friend dies. Welcome, Linda.
Hello, Jill. It's a joy for me to be here with you and with your ladies.
Well, we're glad to have you. I know this may not sound like a chipper topic to a lot of people, but I've read your Old Oak and Little Pumpkin book, and I started the sample of your other book. Matter of fact, I went back and reread the intro twice in it because there was just so much in it. This obviously is very near and dear to your heart situation. Could you tell us a little bit about you as that young 18-year-old health caregiver? Could you share that story with our friends?
Sure. What Jill is referring to is in the book, I tell the story of when I began writing The Courage to Care, it brought up this memory of when I was an 18-year-old in college. And I was volunteering at the social services department of the County General Hospital. One day, the director asked me to visit some patients up on the floor. Now, I grew up and was raised as much as by my grandparents as by my parents. So I had been around seniors and old folks, but not necessarily in a hospital setting. And when I went up to visit the first patient, it was a gentleman who was like listing off the side of his pillow. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, what am I going to say to him? So I probably said, hello, I'm Linda. And I just came up to say hi. And the first thing he said to me was, you know, I'm dying. Now, I don't know about you, but as an 18-year-old, I didn't have any easy response to that. And if you could see me on camera now, you know, the way I is like, whoa, kind of thing. Now, what do I do? Now, what do I say? And I would suggest that a lot of us, even as adults, still have that reaction. Because in our culture today, we may try and help someone as much as we can at home, if that's possible. But more and more, despite 80% of individuals say they want to die at home, 80% end up dying in a hospital or in a nursing home. Wow. So we aren't raised and we don't see how to be with someone and support them as they're getting older and as they're seriously ill, and then especially as they're dying, we don't even know necessarily what it means to be dying. You know, the kind of natural processes, yeah, that our body does to go through to say, okay, this body ain't working no more, you know, and this spirit's got to fly. And so this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, I read, like I said, the intro of that and how in past generations, people would have seen those things and would be acquainted with them. Not to belittle in any way, but I even think of like the Waltons on TV. They lived in the house with the grandparents and the little kids. And then the older kids got older and you watched them have babies. And they were exposed to it. And they saw grandma can't do quite what mom does anymore. And, you know, grandpa's not helping at the mill. They saw those steps and we're missing those steps. With the family so torn apart and spread apart across across distances these days. So I shared in my questionnaire to you about that I work with nearly retired people. Well, you kind of related that to the end of life. It's another stage and it's a natural event, but so many of us are terrified because we haven't been exposed to that up close and personal.
Right. And so how do we not be terrified? How do we see it as just another part of life? One way is to do some reading or to be around old people every now and then. Perhaps the way some of your ladies will be fulfilled is by becoming visitors or becoming hospice volunteers or just being available, there are so many possibilities in a church community. Who reaches out to individuals who have been active and participating members of that community and now can't get there anymore? You know, do we forget them? Do we say, oh, well, you know, too bad? I mean, and that's a crude way. I mean, we probably don't say it that way, but by our actions, what comes to mind is the old saying, out of sight, out of mind. You know? And when you talk to the seriously ill and especially the dying, their most often challenging emotional reaction is feeling abandoned, you know, feeling forgotten. So I guess I would say, depending upon what kinds of communities your ladies are in, ladies out there, you know, are you in a book group? Well, maybe you can still have a book group with this person depending upon their situation and meet at the person's house if they can't get out. Maybe not every time, but something, you know, or have some kind of just a happy gathering that includes this person. I mean, whatever it is, if you're in a choir. Jill, you mentioned that I sing at bedside and I now lead the Berkshire Threshold Choir. So for you ladies who don't know about this, this is another way to perhaps be fulfilled, is to sing. I have a whole chat. In fact, at one point I thought of doing a whole book on just music, but there is a whole fun chapter on music in the Courage to Care, Being Fully Present with the Dying book, because music has shown to have so many fabulously, wonderfully beneficial health and mental health benefits for all people, for all of us, for all of us. So as healthy as you are, may I suggest that if you're not now, you include music every day. And I'll bet if I asked you ladies right now, what's a favorite song of yours? Something has just come to your head. Something has just come to your head.
In the Garden. That was my grandma's favorite.
Okay. Yes. And so if you're in a choir or if you're not in a choir because you didn't want that kind of commitment, and I get that, but you can carry a tune, you know. A lot of these facilities are looking for people to bring music. And it can be any kind of music. It can be old standards. It could be folk. It could be country. It could be spiritual. Do you play a guitar? You know, do you play a violin? I mean, I don't know. Do you play a harp? And you don't have to. We always sing a cappella. So it's the pure voice. We often sing at least in pairs so that there's at least two-part harmony. If we have three singers who know three different parts and we all happen to be available at the same time, right? Because we're all volunteers, then we'll do three-part harmony. That's another wonderful way to be with someone.
As I listened to you talk, so many memories were popping in my head. And we started out talking how that's an uncomfortable subject and it's hard to, if we hadn't been around it. And I can remember myself, my mom passed away 2 years ago, but I can remember over 20 years being terrified, knowing that moment was coming and that I was unable to deal with the reality of it. I don't know. It was just such a thought that was difficult to deal with. And yet when it came right down to it, because of COVID, I only got to see her the last 3 days. I didn't happen to be there at the actual passing, but I found I was able to do it, that I was able to be there and just hold her hand and I could stroke it and she could stroke mine back. She wasn't talking and we'd have to give our hands a rest after an hour or so. And I also know that it was just natural to get up and to sing to her, to try to remember the words to some of her old favorites. And, you know, and I didn't remember all of them. So I'd go on to another song or I started making up them. It didn't matter. I knew my music was important to her and I knew she was important to me. So that was the best way that confer that onto her.
And I would, if I may, I'd like to highlight that, what you just said, Jill. What is important is that she was important to you. Nothing else matters. There is no correct way to do this. You know, people say to me, oh, but I'm afraid of doing the wrong thing, or I'm afraid of saying the wrong thing. Well, okay. Particularly maybe if it's somebody you don't know. There are a lot of great stories and practical tips in my book that help you through that. And if you don't know how death proceeds in the physical body, it also gives you an ABC tutorial, so to speak, on what to look for. So you'll know the stages that the body goes through and you'll know how close this person is getting to the last breath. But it is all it takes is that first time. You know, anybody can talk to you, anybody can educate you, anybody can give you something to read. But the main title of the book is, you need to have the courage to take that first step. We can't give you the experience, you have to take that on your own. And when you get past that first minute, you'll realize it's just your presence that is so very important. Just being there. Being there with this person. And yes, even if the person is not talking, we know from various reasons why, we don't have to get into it, that even when someone is what's called non-responsive, they can still hear. So you can still talk, you can sing, you can do your I love yous, you can do I thank you for, I remember this, I will always remember this, you taught me so and so. You know, and yes, and you don't have to keep talking, right? No. Just being there in this profound silence and the awesomeness of life. I mean, how is it? Come on, folks, ladies. How is it that there is this thing called a birth and a human being that develops and then you have this life and we celebrate the coming? Heck, we need to celebrate the going too.
Right.
And I mean, it is all life. And yes, this person may be now at the end, or as you referred to earlier, and I want to say, I'm also part of the population where the years before me are fewer than the years behind me.
Right.
You know, that this person had an entire life that we can celebrate.
Right.
So be there. Don't have regrets. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
You can never get it back. Now, I understand that there will often be various unforeseen circumstances, for example, like COVID more recently, where you cannot be with someone. You just can't be. Or you have family obligations and you can't get away. Or like when my husband was dying, one of his brothers wanted to come out, but we were in Pennsylvania. His brother was in Colorado. And by the time his brother drove to the airport, then took another plane, then rented the car, he got there after my husband Lloyd died, you know. But it was the intention. And I said to him, and in fact, so his name is Maynard, and I ended up breaking down his apartment as well when he died a few years later, is I had written Maynard a note. And I said, you know, it was your intention that was important. And more than that, I said, you were always the joker who was able to get our kids to laugh. And so you are a wonderful, you know, he brought that personality with him to be there with the kids.
And it helped.
I have four children. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So be there. I mean, that's it. If you can be present. And if you can't, you know, there's something called the telephone and Zoom and FaceTime. Just have someone hold up the phone and you can say your last goodbyes.
One thing I'd like to interject here, especially to the ladies in my group who may not be at that exact end stage yet. I know when my mother-in-law was dying and I had to tell my kids that it's time to come to say your goodbyes, but I had to tell them, this isn't the time to tell her long stories. Yeah,
right.
You can talk to that person. It's not really the moment to make amends. The moments to do that are in the earlier stages. Yes, if you haven't made amends, you can do it then. But what I say to my group, I try to encourage them to make the most of every day. And I know myself, with my mother passing, my father was gone many years ago, and my brother recently got injured, a bad injury to his legs. And I find my brothers and I coming closer because we know how much precious every minute is. And let's make the most of the minutes, because we don't know how many minutes we have left yet either.
We don't. So you're using of the words of most and matters most. So I would say to your ladies, right now, if you haven't already, and even if you have, because what matters most to us changes. It can change from day to day. But when you take some quiet time, and I would suggest you do this, take some quiet time and sit and go inside and ask yourself, what matters most to me now? What matters most in terms of my life, in terms of how I can feel good about my life, about how I can create a fulfilling life? Am I doing that? Am I not doing that? If you take periodic stock, if you will, of how you're living, then you are creating your fulfilling life now. And whenever you take your last breath, you can do it peacefully and without regrets.
Very good. I'm going to pause right there, and we're going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, I'd like to hear you tell a little more about self-worth and having those important conversations continue up where you just were. Okay? I hope you're enjoying our guests on this episode. Just wanted to remind you that this episode is being brought to you by the Facebook group Empowering Women, where Jill McCarthy, myself, is the leader. And it is a safe place that facilitates belonging and yet encourages our uniqueness and individuality. Feel free to check it out. The links will be in the show notes. And now, back to the show. And we're back. Could you tell us about the workshop you have about self-worth?
Sure. It's a workshop, and I've given several talks. It's called What Matters Most? Conversations Worth Having. And when we're, I think sometimes when we look at what we want to do and who we want to be, we maybe get hung up on the how it's going to happen. How do I create a fulfilling life? And we forget that more important than the how, I'd suggest, is you have to decide what. What matters to you? What are your values? What are your talents? What is your heart calling you to? Okay, I wasn't planning on doing this. Of course, I don't plan. So, you are beautiful. Be yourself. After all, everyone else is taken. You are beautiful. Be yourself. May your fullness awaken.
Thank you.
No one knows what our fullness is but ourself. And I would suggest that eye has not seen, ear has not heard, that there's even more awesomeness out there that we can imagine, but for us to begin to take those steps. So take sort of periodic check-ins, you know?
Yeah.
How is this feeling? How is this feeling for me? Is this what I want to be doing? Is this how I want to be spending my time? What doors are closing on me? See, now I would call that a day sign, saying, oh, okay. Spirit's giving me a little nudge that maybe I need to go through a different door.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And I don't know, ladies, what your beliefs are. So I'm saying this is mine.
That's fine.
And that is also important then to do that now as you're well, to look at your retirement. And I know that retirement can be busier. Right? Again, it's what you want to make it,
right,
and how you want to give back.
Absolutely.
That will be different for every single one of us. And there's no judgment here. There's no comparison. It's what is important for you. What are you being called to do? What is your heart saying to you at this time? And it might be a short-term thing, and then you're going to go in a whole different direction. Or maybe it'll be just another branch of the same tree.
That's a good point. I can remember one time I was talking to a friend, and she put up two hands like this, and she said, put your hand someplace in the middle. And she said, from that middle point to wherever the end is, that's what time you have left. And I know I keep telling my ladies, make the most of this time. Do you have a heart's desire? Is there anything you want to do? But when you said about the retirees going and going and going, I read something last night where it said there's a go-go period of retirement, and then there's a slow-go, and then there's a no-go. And, you know, you can have these good intentions that you want to do, But if you don't get them going, you don't know when that slower period's coming. You don't know when that point where you can't go anymore. So don't leave it to the last second figuring I can do it then. Make the most of this day while you still have it, while you still have this much energy and ability. And I want to share one other thing.
I would just say, well said, Jill.
Thank you. I want to just, I know I was always terrified. I was afraid a grandparent would die on Christmas. Somebody's aunt died on Christmas Day. And I remember that was terrible. It came to the door. And I was always terrified of it. And my grandpa was 90 years old and in the hospital for breast cancer, of all things. And I said to him, Grandpa, aren't you scared of dying? And he looked at me and he says, well, you know, I stopped and I thought about it one day and really kind of looked it in the eye. And he said, you know, tain't so bad. Once he made up his mind that that is what was going to happen and he faced it, then it didn't have any ownership over him anymore. He could go on and enjoy what days he had.
There is a proverb, and I don't know that we have time to go into it all, but it's called, it's going into the roar. And the point of it is just that, is when we imagine something, we tend to imagine it as being so more terrible, scary, anxious than it really is. And when you face it and go into it, then you see, oh, this is nothing compared to what I thought it was going to be. You know, I mean, that kind of thing.
I'm going to stop right there. And when we come back, I'd love to hear about your old oaks and little pumpkins. Okay.
Thank you.
I hope you're enjoying our speaker. Remember, you can find out more about her in the show notes, in her bio, and through her links. Remember, my links are also in the bio if you want to contact me. And now for our conclusion. Now, and here's Linda, and she's going to tell about her brand new book that just came out just days ago, just since I met her. It's perfect timing. So Linda, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Jill. So some of you might think, oh my goodness, now how did she get from writing a book on dying well and living well to a children's book? So Old Oak and Little Pumpkin is based on a story that my late husband, when he was, as I mentioned earlier, we have four children. And when he would be tucking them in at night, he would often make up stories. This is a story I always have remembered. And I promised myself, sort of honor him, that when I also wrote for children, and I've been asked and encouraged to write for children as well, that I would do this book first based on a story he told. And so, as I say in the little to the readers, you know, dear friends, little pumpkins can scare easily. And sometimes we are those little pumpkins.
Absolutely.
But can scare easily and need reassurance from their old oaks that all is okay and they're not alone. And then, of course, old oaks can be human figures or they can be religious figures, and often both. And that old oaks help their little pumpkins feel safe and loved. So the story, and if I can, I'm just going to read a little bit of it. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's since my husband told it as a bedtime story, it's set up as a bedtime story. But because you can't see who's telling the story and who the child is, any person who's telling the story can imagine themselves here, and any child can imagine him or herself here. So the story begins, once upon a time, an old oak tree stood next to a field. It was spring and time for the farmer to plant pumpkin seeds. Every year, old oak watched and waited for the little pumpkins. The warm sun shook off the chill of winter. The rains sprinkled, dropped, plopped on the ground. Green shoots poked through the soggy earth. Old oak was excited. The pumpkins were coming. Days passed. The sun felt warmer. The green shoots grew bigger. They became twisty, twirly, curly vines. Later, flowers opened on the vines. When the sun felt too hot, Old Oak knew that summer had come. The flowers became teeny, tiny, greeny pumpkins. Some had small patches of orange. The pumpkins were here. As the other pumpkins grew bigger and bigger and bigger, Little Pumpkin grew smaller, slower and slower. The sun went down sooner and sooner and sooner, and the wind blew colder and colder and colder. Other trees were losing all their leaves, but not Old Oak. Autumn had come. Children came too. Each day, more and more and more children came to the field. Little Pumpkin was so happy to be with them. And each day, the children took home more and more pumpkins. One morning, Little Pumpkin shivered and looked around. The field was quiet. The pumpkins and the children were gone. "I'm all alone," said Little Pumpkin. "What will happen now?" And that's what, you know, is it a new school situation? Do you lose a member of the family? Are you having issues somewhere? What comes to mind is just like the story of the prodigal, where we are all the father and the older brother and the prodigal. Reading this, you can also read it on another level where we are all the old oak as well as the little pumpkin. And there are butterflies on each page that the children can look for. There's a butterfly hidden in each illustration. And the symbol of the butterfly, you know, the transformation, and more than that. So may you ladies be like the butterfly, trusting on your sacred wings and creating a fulfilling life. A life that fully unfolds who you are and you came here to be. Empowered, encouraged, and inspiring of yourself and through you for others. May you fly high.
Amen. We're a staff right there. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
See you in the funny papers. Bye-bye for now.